Facebook Hype. I'm Jen, and today I'm joined by Karen and Kristen. Hello, ladies. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Yeah? All right. And you guys have been crazy busy with moving around and doing all kinds of stuff. So we haven't had Book Hype in a couple weeks because everyone's been super busy. So we're glad to have you guys back.
Yes.
So
it's nice to be back, let me tell you. It's a little, now that some of the stress has passed, we can just breathe a little bit and talk books.
Excellent. Always a good thing. So I'm sure you guys have read maybe a few things while you've been busy moving and doing crazy stuff, or maybe not. We'll see. So Karen, have you managed to read anything while your craziness was happening?
One book. One book besides Paper Princess. So two books technically, which I feel is a great accomplishment for me right now. But I read Roll by Jay Crownover at Kristen's, you know, offering. She offered it to me, and I was like, well, I can't turn this away. So that was really good. Loved it. Can't wait until some of the later books, because some of the characters introduced in the first book get their own books, and I really connected with those characters right away. But this is the one about the tattoo shop and all the guys who are in the tattoo shop. And I found myself really looking at people's tattoos much more closely lately than I have in the past. So clearly had some influence on me. But yeah, it was great.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I definitely recommend it.
For anyone out there who has read
awesome.
The Marked Men, Karen has found herself drawn to Nash, which I can't wait for her to read.
I feel like that says something about me, and I'm a little worried about what that says.
Even if it meant something, which I'm not saying it does, it would be all good things. Don't worry.
Okay, good. Awesome.
All right, then. All right, Kristen, how about you? What have you been reading?
Well, the only thing that I've truly read and finished, besides Paper Princess, is Walk the Edge by Katie McGarry, which is the second in the Thunder Road series, and it is so good. It's about Razor, who, if you've read the first one, is like, yeah, he's so beautifully damaged, and you just, I was so excited that she wrote his book second, because I really didn't think we were going to get his right away, and so when I found out after finishing Nowhere But Here that his story was next, I got very, very excited. So it was just as good as I hoped it would be. So, yes, and highly recommend.
Kristen and I kind of were reading it at the same time. So we'd be like, where are you right now? Oh, I just finished that part. Wasn't it so good? And we got to talk about it while we were reading it. And that was really fun. We should do that more often.
We really should. It was kind of awesome.
You guys are so funny. Who was I reading? I was doing that, and I was messaging back and forth with somebody. Was it you, Karen?
About what?
Or was it someone else? We were reading something at the same time. It was for Book Hype, and we were, like, messaging back and forth about it. Or I had just finished it, and you were, like, halfway through it. Hmm. I can't remember. It might have been Brittany. But there was a lot of messaging going on as we were reading the book. Like, it was kind of crazy. It was like, oh, my God. I could have done that with this one had there been anyone around, because I read it like yesterday, but oh, I was not a happy bunny. We'll get to that though. So for me, again, at the behest of Kristen, I read them a little bit out of order. Lauren Lane has the Oxford series and the Stiletto series. I read the two Oxford books first, and then I went back and I had bought the four I just went ahead and bought all four at once, because really, why waste time and money going back and having to rebuy? So I bought all four of the Stiletto series books, which were the first four of the kind of paired series. And I really loved them. I loved Julian Mitchell's story. They're like polar opposites, but in the best way possible. And she has all of these like preconceived notions about him that are just not. And, oh, I loved it. I loved everything about it. So I was really excited by that story. So I've read all four of those, and now I'm just patiently, not really patiently, waiting for the next Oxford book, which is Lincoln's book, correct?
Yes, and she just released the cover, like, this morning. And it's beautiful.
Now?
Yeah, she released
I'm
it
gonna have
to her.
Go write that down.
If you're a part of her mailing list, she releases her newsletter every Thursday, I think it is. And she put it in last Thursday's, and then she put it like wide online like this morning or yesterday or something.
Oh,
so
I shall
Lincoln is out
go
there.
Search. Yeah. because I need to know more about that boy. Because throughout the entire, when you read the Oxford series, you know, there's the group of guys that work at the men's magazine, and they're all connected in different ways. And then there's this one guy, Lincoln, who's very mysterious and lovely and kind of like ridiculous all at the same time. But there's definitely this big air of mystery around him, and I love that. So I need to know about what his mystery is. Because yeah, I think everyone else is kind of straightforward.
Well, and a lot of readers have been clamoring for Lincoln's story. They really thought we were going to get it second in the Oxford series, but she's like, no, I'm saving him for last. And we're like,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, she's excited in the kind of random guy there, but I liked him too. I liked his story a lot. Yeah. So I'm kind of excited about that. I'm kind of just waiting on that. And then I've got a couple things here and there that I've started, but I don't want to talk about them yet because I haven't read enough of them to like be like, oh my God, I love this. But I did, you guys, I did just get in the final book in the Raven King or the Raven cycle. I'm super excited. Like that, as soon as like literally when I'm done this podcast, that is what I'm doing. I am starting that book because it's the fourth novel. It's the final novel. So many things happened in the last book. And it is one of my favorite series. And it's really weird because it's so different from the other things that Maggie Stiefvater has written that it just, and there are a couple girls on Hyperbole that are like so ridiculously into this book that it's crazy. We might do a special book hype episode on it. We might, it might have to happen. So, and I know you guys haven't read it, so I won't drag you into it, but Nat and Brooke would definitely be on board for that. So we'll have to see how it goes. So that's kind of where we're at. Oh, and I guess for Book Bites, which we haven't done in ages, but I feel like this needs to happen for just a brief moment. So all three of us got to see Captain America Civil War this week. and it's a comic book. So I feel like we can justify this conversation briefly.
Yeah, even if we're going to talk about it anyway.
Because we can. We will not spoil. We will not spoil. I promise. But you guys, let's just talk for a moment about how you need to go see this movie. Not like it needs any extra pitch or bonus, but I think it's possibly one of the best Marvel movies we've seen so far. There's so much in this movie. Like, I couldn't keep up with it all. It was so good.
Let me tell you Britton, mm-hmm. who is very, very, very new to the Marvel Cinematic Universe fandom.
Yep, and she's seen three different movies. That's it.
Yeah.
And not all of them were Captain America movies. That's the best part. I think only one of them was.
She just watched Winter Soldier for the first time, like, the other day, which blows my mind, but whatever. She's seen the Iron Man movies. That's what I care about most. She didn't even see Age of Ultron, which is it has a lot of influence on what happens in Civil War. So I was like, yeah, you should go back and watch that. She's very new to it, and she messaged me and said, Karen, I think this is one of the best movies I've seen in a very long time. Not even just superhero movies, not Marvel movies, one of the best movies. So even if you're not like on the superhero bandwagon, check it out because it's good.
It's definitely more than just the superheroes this time. Go ahead, Kristen.
No, it's good. And it's, if you have been a part of all of the marketing and you have been following everything that's been going on, I can say that it does not disappoint. Like, it's what you want it to be. It's great. The story is great. Everything about it is just really, really great.
Yeah, I think the story is incredibly solid. Like, you absolutely see how both sides are playing and why. And I think that was the most surprising part for me, because sometimes these big action, you know, superhero movies, they can have little plot holes here and there. Something doesn't quite connect, or, you know, you have to jump and make a lot of big conclusions. I don't think you do that in Civil War once. It's all right there. You're watching it. It unfolds. They're telling you the story. They're showing you the story. It's not like you have to make a lot of guesses and assumptions about things. It's all kind of right there, and it's so good, and it is highly comical. There's a lot of comedy along with, like, we'll talk after we're done recording for public consumption so we don't spoil anybody, but there are some really, really funny moments with people you wouldn't expect, and I think that's the best part, too. There are some things you're like, oh my God, that character is not supposed to be funny, but they are funny. Or just a lot that goes, there's a lot in that movie. The action sequences are killer. Like, they are amazing. And so there's just something for everyone in that movie, but it needs to be May 6th so I can go see it again. That needs to happen right now.
Pretty much, yeah.
That needs to happen. Maybe, Karen, maybe when we go out to BEA, we can go with Danielle. She's a crazy Captain America fan.
Yeah.
That might be nice. Anyway, moving right along, let's talk about Paper Princess, which was Kristen's choice for book review this month. And it is by Aaron Watt, who is a pseudonym for actually two different authors, L. Kennedy and Jen Fredericks, right? Is that, am I saying her name right?
Frederick.
Yes. No S. Sorry. Anyway, we've all read some of Elle's books, The Score, The Deal, and The Mistake, and we're waiting on one more from her because there's still one boy who does not have his story told yet. But I've not read anything from Jen. Have you read something from Jen before?
I have. I've read Sacked and Jockblocked, both of which are her sports romance. She's got a lot of variety. She writes in a little bit of everything. Like, if you look at her published list, like, it's crazy. She's got all kinds of different genres. So check her out, especially if you haven't – if you like sports romance, if you're really into that. I really, really liked Sacked. Jockblock is really good, too, but Sacked was fantastic.
See, and I'm into these sorts of books, Kristen, because you've introduced me and now I can't escape them. It's not a bad thing. It's really not. It's just I tend to consume them at a ridiculous rate at this point.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So let's get started on our conversation. I know we talked a little bit amongst the three of us about this novel. And I know Brittany's reading it right now, but she couldn't be on tonight. And she's like, oh, I like it so far. But we have kind of varying opinions on it. And I think Karen and I are actually going to be pretty well matched on this one on what we think. I have a sneaking suspicion, and I don't know about Kristen. I know Kristen really likes it, right? That's what you said. You reviewed it. You liked it. So let's go with buy or borrow, and we'll start with Kristen.
Well, mine's going to be a buy because for me, it's a buy if it's got reread potential, and this book for me is chock full of reread potential. I've already basically read it twice. There are parts that I didn't read a second time because I remembered it or didn't care. I was like, eh, it's not that big of a scene. But I have already basically read the book twice. I really like it. I'm geeked and excited for the second one to come out in July. So, yeah, for me, it's a buy.
All right. Yeah, thank God the second one comes out in July, but we'll get to that part. All right, so Karen, go ahead.
I have very conflicted feelings about this book. So I'm going to say borrow. I don't think everybody's going to enjoy it, but I think there are some people who are really, really going to like it. I guess the reason why I'm so conflicted, which we'll get into detail later on, is just there were some parts that made me really angry and really uncomfortable, and other parts that I absolutely fell in love with. So it's like two different ends of the spectrum. I loved some parts of it, and I really, really disliked others. And I'm still trying to figure out, like, was that on purpose? Or did I just not like it because I didn't like it? You know, did they write it that way? And I guess we'll have to see. I'm actually really looking forward to this conversation because I'm hoping that you guys can help me figure out a little bit more how I feel about some things.
I was psychoanalyzing them the entire time I was reading, so I'm sure I have a lot to say about that. Like, I'm not even kidding.
Oh,
I even went back
surprised.
And looked at I went back and looked at certain parts, and I'm like, oh, my God. Anyway, so I feel kind of like Karen does. I did like the book overall, and I will read the second book because, A, I need to know. And, B, it's very polarizing. Some of the characters are very polarizing. One minute you love them, the next minute you're going to punch them in the face.
Yes.
Like, it's going to happen. Like, if this person existed in real life, there would be beatings going on because what the hell? We'll get to him. But there's a lot going on in this book. And parts I really relate and parts I was like, what the hell is wrong with you? No, but really, what crazy did you take today? Because, oh, my God. But the whole it's about family dynamic, and family dynamic is never clean and easy. And if it is, then it's really not a fit. You know what I mean? Then it's a little more Little House on the Prairie than anything else. And I think that what they do and establish really, really well within this book is that they establish this really disjointed family dynamic where dad's not necessarily in charge. He's the bank, and he, you know, he can kind of put his foot down, but there's a lot of guilt on him, and his guilt allows him to let those boys run wild. And the second eldest son runs the roost, and he is, you know, the prince, and he runs the place. And, you know, they have this thing, you know, they talk about the royal decree because their last name is Royal, and it's legit. It's just so disturbing on so many levels, but these things really happen. And that's what I think makes it more disturbing for me, is that these are, it's not like this big fantasy world they built about around this family. Like, these dynamics occur and these things happen. And that's what makes it so, like, anger inducing, because it's got a lot of reality to it, I think, for me. And I'm like, oh, this is terrible. But at the same time, for me, it's going to be a borrow for now. And once I read the second book, I might change my opinion. Because if they, I don't know, it depends. But I could change my opinion on that. We'll see. I could change my opinion by the end of the episode at this point, so who knows. But I'm really, because I just finished it yesterday, and then I went back and reread parts this morning, and I'm still just really angry. So if that comes across, I'm super sorry. But some of those characters, they need some help. So essentially, Paper Princess is about a girl named Ella. She is an orphan. Her mom died of cancer, and she's 17. So Ella is basically, she moved out of the town she was in to escape social services. Her mom was a stripper by trade, and so now Ella becomes a stripper in order to kind of just make her way and be able to pay for herself. And her goal is to just finish school so she can try to go to college and try to, like, be on her own and make good. And that's always her goal. And she's not, like, stripping, naked stripping. It's not quite that far into it. It's a step above, you know, above that. Which I know that doesn't sound really different, but they make that distinction very clear in the novel. And as this is happening, a man swoops in and says, I'm your guardian. This is what's happening, and I'm taking you out of here. And Ella's very brazen and bold, and she tries to stand up for herself, and she's very skittish in the way that only a kid who grew up with just a mom and has seen some really bad things can be skittish and wary of the world. She wasn't taken care of. All of her needs weren't met. She was the adult in the house, and you can see that by the way she kind of behaves and reacts sometimes. And so you have that element of Ella. And Callum Royal, who was her father's best friend, and her father basically came into her mom's life, got her mom pregnant, and her mom never told the guy that she was pregnant, and then so he never knew he had a daughter until recently. So Callum comes in and takes her away because her father, Steve, has also passed. And so Callum feels like it's his responsibility to take care of Ella. And she kind of gets swept up into this obscenely wealthy setting. You know, Callum Royal owns an air company, and they make a ridiculous amount of money. And he has five boys, five egotistical jackass boys. I maybe liked one of them by, that's not true. I did start to like one of them quite a bit, and I was okay with him. The others, maybe not so much. And so from there, the story kind of unfolds, and the boys are not nice to her. Like I said, there is the prince, Reed, who kind of runs the show, and all the others will follow whatever Reed says for them to do. Reed is a year older than Ella, so he's a senior. Then there's Gideon, who is in college, so he's the oldest. Then there's Easton, who is Ella's age, and they're in the same grade. And then there are the twins, Sawyer and Sebastian. Oh, the twins. We'll get to them, too. So we have all this cast of characters. There's also Brooke, who is Callum's girlfriend / girl toy. And she is a piece of work. We'll definitely talk about her. She is also someone who didn't necessarily come from the right side of the tracks that Callum has taken in. And that they kind of have this, it's really just a physical relationship. If you're reading the story, you get that vibe. Although Brooke in her head sees it as something very differently, it's not different. and I don't like her at all. For lots of reasons. And then the story kind of just goes from there about Ella trying to make it at the very swanky prep school that the royals basically run. So it's an interesting story. It's definitely a story where things are imbalanced. And there's a lot of love, hate, hate, love, and kind of things that fill up the pages. And Ella's an interesting heroine for a lot of different reasons. But let's start with meeting the royals. So basically the story starts and Ella has decided that the story starts with Callum showing up at the school to fetch Ella and be like, I'm your guardian. I'm taking you home. You know, this is, and Ella immediately rejects the idea because she has no idea who this man is. And, you know, he's very well put together and it scares her. So she decides she's going to go on the run. And then Callum shows up at the strip club that she's going to go work at, where her ID says she is 34. So what did you guys think of the opening scene and how Ella is introduced to Callum?
Yeah, Callum. I mean, the guy comes off, especially at the beginning, you're a little leery of him because he's just this guy she's never met before. All of a sudden, he's there and he wants to take her away. Like, you're like, I see Ella. Like, I understand why Ella is like, what the hell? But as it goes on, you kind of start to see that Callum's not all bad. Like, he's not. He's a good guy. Like, he's trying really hard to do right by a lot of people, and he's made a lot of mistakes along the way. But ultimately, I think I really, really do like Callum. I hope that he stops being quite as naive as he is and starts to make a difference and to do more things, like, with his sons, and that they can kind of, like, build a better relationship, because I think that will help both sides of the family, Callum and his sons.
Right, but I don't think Callum's naive. I think Callum is indifferent. Callum carries a lot of guilt around with him for the things that happened with their mother. And so I think Callum's way of making up for it is by letting them run wild. Because let's face it, Callum is the purse strings. He could take away their big fancy cars, he could cut them off, and then what would they do? Yes, they would rebel and they would have hissy fits, but they couldn't be the boys that they are without other fancy toys. He has enough power and enough say. He's still the adult in the family. He could still make better choices. He's not, though. And he's not because it's hard. And he can't do hard. Just like his sons can't do anything that's really hard. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's this one big pile of ridiculousness when it comes to it. None of them really want to make the hard decisions. They all just want to, like, pretend like things are okay or do really stupid stuff or dangerous things because they're all kind of lost and broken.
Anyway, same time, I completely, like, I totally see what you're saying. At the same time, I think Callum feels so badly about the fact that they've lost their mother that he thinks that the money makes up for it, and that he I genuinely feel like he wants to know his sons. He wants to be a decent father, but he's making a ton of mistakes because he's letting them be these crazy wild kids. I don't think he necessarily knows everything that they're doing. He doesn't see exactly what they've become because he's blind to it. And I think that's where I think the naivete comes in. Like, he's closing his mind off and not seeing everything that's in front of him so that he doesn't have to deal with it because he's still grieving his wife and he's still trying to figure out how to move on himself. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I don't know if it's naivete or if it's ignorance, though. Like, yeah, he has to know. Like, definitely. You see your kid come in with a beat up face and you don't ask any questions. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are certain things that you just don't overlook. And yet, he manages to overlook them every time. So, yeah. I don't know. Karen, what did you think about Callum?
I basically feel the same way as you guys. When we first met him, I did not feel great about him because he basically told this 17-year-old girl that he knew was 17 years old to give him a lap dance. And yes, you know, he stopped it after a minute or so and felt really bad about it and everything, but he reminds me basically of, like, he should be the sixth brother, like the oldest brother, because he's a man-child and he can't deal with his own problems. And yes, clearly he is very upset over his wife's death, but he needs to become the father that his children need, and he's not doing that. And I think, you know, whether it's purposeful ignorance or he is just being naive, either way, he's setting his problems aside and, you know, just he's with Brooke and, like, that doesn't mean anything, and yet he stays with her. And it's very frustrating. By the end of the book, though, I had a lot more respect for him, but I always kept going back to that club scene that made me feel kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think part of that scene was him trying to call her bluff. I don't think, because he didn't really know her, I think he thought by calling her bluff that she wouldn't do it. And then the second she did, he was so uncomfortable himself that he was like, oh, she just called me on my bluff, and now I'm in really in a bad situation. So I totally get what you're saying, Karen. It's definitely an uncomfortable situation, but I don't think it was predatory in any way. I think it was, I'm going to call your bluff and see how you play it. And then she played it, and then he had nothing else to do but be like, all right, now I'm literally picking your ass up and carrying you out the door, because that's the only solution to this problem right now. So I don't know. Anyway, so then Callum brings her home, and we get our first glimpse of the royals. Only four of them are home, and it becomes clear to Ella really, really quickly that Reed is the one in charge, because they all look to Reed. So they will do whatever Reed tells them to do. They will like her if Reed tells them to like her. They will hate her and give her a really hard time if Reed tells them to do that, which is disconcerting in a lot of ways that Reed has so much power. What did you think of the boys when you first, and then there's also a couple of scenes with just Reed and Easton and Ella too. So what did you guys think of those scenes as they were kind of unfolding?
I mean, you're not, when this book begins and you meet the royals through Ella's eyes, you're not supposed to like them. And it's not hard to not like them, because Reed is, you know, he's snotty towards his father. He's a total jerk. And Easton and Sebastian Sawyer just, you know, they follow his lead. Reed gives them their barking orders and they go from there. So, yeah, when this book begins, you don't like them. They're awful and they treat Ella horribly. And I think that's exactly how you're supposed to feel.
Yeah. Karen, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with that. My issue with it was that I disliked them so much that I was afraid I was never going to come back from that. Because particularly, like, the twins in my mind, we don't really know anything about them. Same with Gideon. Like, we get some hints here and there of, like, what their deal is, but they're basically not a part of the main story. So then you have Easton and Reed. And Reed felt like he was always manhandling Ella, and that really frustrated me, especially because she was such a strong person. And I get that part of their connection is that, you know, she also kind of just falls in line when he tells her to do something, and maybe that's because she wants to please him, not because she sees him as somebody who needs to be obeyed, but because she genuinely wants to do that, you know, to make him happy, to do what he tells her to do. But for a while there, it felt like it was too much, and I was, again, starting to feel a little uncomfortable. Same thing happened with Easton, because in the beginning, when he was being really disgusting toward her and shoving his hand down his pants, I was like, this guy is genuinely scaring me. Like, I don't know what he's going to do. By the end, I ended up absolutely loving him and feeling really, really bad for him and his situation. But again, in the back of my mind, I have those things that he did before. And I want, Jen, psychoanalyze him, because I want to like him and not feel guilty about liking him.
Okay, so I really like Easton. I think, again, yay! I think Easton was just following... I think Easton was just following orders in a lot of ways. Like, I think that was just how it worked out. And he came around much quicker to Ella. Even before Reed said it was okay to be nice to Ella, Easton was being nice to Ella. Mm-hmm. Like, he's started to branch away from that. And just in a couple of the things that he says, you can see that he means well, that he has a good heart. And so, and he's probably one of the more screwed up royals. Like, he's got addiction problems. He's, Easton is a mess. And so I think for him, it's a little bit different. You know, he really is a lost boy. And for him, Ella is somebody who is kind of, I don't want to say a savior, but someone who he can actually talk to and who they can relate to. They've both had loss and they've both had, you know, they live different lives. But I think Easton kind of came around after a much shorter period of time than, say, Reed. And Reed is his own bag of issues. I had a really hard time liking Reed. I only liked him because I liked to hate him and I wanted to punch him in the face. And it changed a little bit over time, but not very much. But here's my thing with Reed. Reed is hiding a huge secret. And I don't think we even know the beginning of the extent of that secret. And all along, so the ending was not an overwhelmingly huge surprise to me, because as soon as there's a moment with Gideon and they talk about Gideon having like hickeys and Gideon just being really off, and instantly what came to my mind was that the ending that we saw with Reed was with Gideon in mind. But I actually think it's with both of them. And I think that there's a big puppet master involved in this, and there, I don't know, there could be blackmail, there could be whatever, but I definitely think that there's a big puppet master that is beyond these teenage boys who don't really have anyone to look after them. And there's an element of Reed where he thinks that he has to protect his entire family, but there's also an element of Reed where he wants to escape, because one thing that he repeats multiple times is that he is leaving because he has to remake himself and he can't do this anymore. And he doesn't want to take anyone with him and he doesn't want to hurt anyone. He just wants to leave. And once he goes, he's never coming back. So clearly there's something going on that's affecting him that drastically that he basically just wants to run away. And so while I don't love Reed like I probably should, I think there are some serious issues going on with him that we haven't even begun to see yet. And so that's why I'm kind of on the fence with Reed.
Yeah, okay. Real quick, because I also love Easton. I think he is the royal. I think we're supposed to see that they're not all bad. Easton has a lot of screwed up things going on, but deep down to his core, I think he is a decent guy, and hopefully we'll see more of that as the series progresses. Reed. When you start this book, he is such a jerk, and then little things happen and you start to see that there are reasons why he acts the way he does, and there are reasons why he's giving the barking orders and why his brothers seem to follow him. Like, he is trying to protect his family because Ella has come in, and from what we see at the end of the book, I think that goes a long way to showing why they react to Ella the way they do, is that there's already been a woman who walked into this house after their mother, and clearly things have not gone the way you would want a new woman in these boys' lives to go. There's something going on with her. Again, we don't know because we didn't get the explanation of that final scene, but I think that Ella coming in, they saw another predator. They saw someone else who was using their father, and considering what Brooke is doing by the end of the book, it's not hard for me to see that Reed was worried, that Reed was terrified of what Ella could become and what of a threat to the royals she could be. So for me, that's why I could kind of see what was turning in his head as all of this crazy is going on and why he's acting like such a jerk. And then when things start to kind of mend and when him and Ella start to talk, he realizes that she's not that person.
I think he realized it before because he knew. He read her file. He knew. And that when he talks to Easton about it, there's the moment in the hallway after. Okay, so there's I'm getting way ahead of myself. So at one point, Reed walks in on Easton kissing Ella, and Reed is not happy about it. And I don't think it's for the reasons we initially assume, and I don't think it's for the reasons that Ella assumes either. You're led to believe that Reed's mad because he doesn't believe, you know, Ella should not be involved in the family, period. But really, Reed is jealous. I mean, there's a lot of underlying jealousy with Reed as well throughout the whole book. And that's definitely something that you can pick up on pretty clearly if you're reading it, you know, kind of from an objective point of view, not just from Ella's standpoint. But as you're reading it, you can pick up on things that will lead you to believe that Reed is highly jealous of any other boy talking to Ella, even though he won't necessarily admit that. And so Reed knows about Ella. You know, he knows because he and Easton have a conversation. He can say, well, she worked 3 jobs and she did this and she supported herself after her mom died. So he knows about the good things that Ella did. It's not a question of whether or not, you know, dad's bringing home this random chick that nobody knows about and she's going to ruin our lives. She's going to sleep with our father. She's going to do all these things for money. That was not the case. But what was super interesting about that whole conversation was that Reed knew that Ella had been a stripper because Brooke had told them, or Brooke had told him in particular. And so that was kind of what cued me that something was not right in this situation with Brooke and with Reed, because this is a grown woman. Why is she telling this to the boys? Like, why is she involved at all? It's not her place. So I don't know, but it's just a very complicated situation.
It really is. It really is. There's a lot to unpack with these boys and their life.
I think that's what bothers me so much, because it is so complicated and it's maybe like too real for me, because when we see Ella at school and even at home in a lot of cases, they're bullying her. I mean, they're awful to her. And the way that Easton first propositions her, if somebody had done that to me, I would never speak to that person again. I would have been out of there. Like, nothing would have been worth that. But that's me. And, you know, I am very, very different from Ella. And even if I hate somebody, I'm polite to them because that's just how I grew up and how I am today. But I think that's what makes it so difficult for me to understand why she stays with them and to really like care about the brothers, because in the end I do, but I also can't get out of my head what all happened before. And I guess maybe that's just the answer, is that it's complicated and these characters aren't perfect, not in the slightest, and we just have to accept that. But when do you get to a point where one of them, you know, whatever they've done is unforgivable? How much can you forgive before you're like, I can't do this anymore?
Right. And I think that's kind of the big question that we're left with at the end of the book, because the book ends in a cliffhanger, essentially. And Ella's pretty much like, I'm done and I'm out. It's not just like she's done, she's out.
The end was like the least problematic part of the book for me.
Right. No, I know. But so then what happens next? Do you know what I mean? So I guess for me, that's why I'm saying it could be a buy depending how book two goes for me, because there's going to have to be a whole lot of begging, groveling, pleading, and, you know, letting her beat the crap out of you kind of thing before that can even be a discussion of anything else. Do you know what I mean? Like,
see, for me, book two is hopefully going to give us the answers as to like what has made these boys the way they are. Like, it's clearly not just the fact that they lost their mother. Something else has happened to make them this awful.
And that's why I think Brooke plays a horrific part in all of this. She's the master manipulator in this situation. And like I said, I think that Brooke is involved with both Gideon and Reed, because Gideon is the one that at the end of the book, we're jumping totally ahead, but like, this is such a big deal. So at the end of the book, Ella essentially walks in on Reed in bed with Brooke. And Reed just sits there. He doesn't even know what to do. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't chase after her. And this is after they, like, have been together for a while. Like, they've decided that they're going to be together. And he publicly kind of goes with that.
Well, and this is right after she's just talked to Gideon, who told her to stay the hell away from Reed. Okay. I was like, who told her to, like, just stay the hell away?
Yeah. So Gideon basically comes in the middle of the night, and Gideon's away at college, but he came home specially to talk to Ella, to take her out of the house, to like pull her outside of the house, to pull her away and be like, what's going on with you and Reed? And she's like, she plays it really cool. She plays it off because she doesn't really know what's going on with you. She can, with Gideon, she can sense something's wrong. And Gideon's like, yeah, good. Keep it that way. Don't be involved with him. You know, don't do that. It's not good. And this is the other thing. The boys all have it in their head, at least the three that we see primarily, which is Reed, Gideon, and Easton, that they are horrible. That they, and Easton even calls them, he says, you know, we're great in the sack, but we're category four hurricanes outside of that. And so he's like, we destroy everything in our path. And that's basically what Gideon is trying to tell Ella, that Reed will destroy her, not necessarily intentionally, but he will destroy her. And so Ella goes back and decides that that's not relevant to her. And so she goes bursting into Reed's room, and Brooke is in bed with Reed. And that's literally, other than the fact that Ella, like, says peace and leaves everything behind. She leaves the brand new car they bought them. They bought her all the clothes they bought her. She only takes what she came with and leaves and gets on a bus. And that's legitimately where it ends. So you're left not knowing what the hell's going on. But you get the distinctive vibe that Brooke is a predator in some way. Like, I can't put my finger on it. I don't know what it is, but Brooke is every bit a predator in this situation. Brooke's only goal is money, because Callum essentially, oh, one of the things we should also mention as we're talking about this is that Ella's father, Steve, had a will, and he knew about Ella before he died. And so Callum's set to take Ella, and Brooke insists that she goes to the reading of the will, which is the weirdest thing ever. You're no one to this girl. Why do you have to go to the reading of the will? Like, I'm confused. And she has, like, this huge hissy fit. And Callum basically chucks her. And so then when it comes time for the reading of the will, Callum goes with Ella, and they see Steve's widow there, Dina. And she's a nasty little thing as well. And then Brooke is with Dina, which also makes me very suspicious, quite frankly. And then Ella finds out, this is also the icing on the cake for the end of the book. Ella finds out that she's a multimillionaire, like, huge. She got left half of everything of her father's. And so she's now, money would not ever be an obstacle for her again. She's inherited, like, everything. So then to find out that she walks in on Reed and Brooke at the very end, it's a very weird dynamic. But there's also another moment in the book where Ella's downstairs eating breakfast and Reed comes down, and they're kind of already together. And she goes upstairs to change into her bathing suit, and she sees Brooke upstairs. This is right after Callum had basically kicked her out and told her they're done, not to come back. And so Ella's like, well, I think she was coming from my room. But in reality, there's every possibility that she had been coming from Reed's room, because Ella thought Reed was out. She didn't know he was home. So they could have easily been in his room at that time, too, which is the other thing I realized after I had read through everything and finally got to the end part, that I think that that's what was going on at that time, too.
Yeah, so that's basically the same. That's what I read into it, too, is that even if he wasn't upstairs at that time, because I have no idea if he was or not, like, she was poking around his room and near the brother's part of the house. Like, I don't think she was ever in Ella's room, because Ella goes for her money. Like, did Brooke, you know, was Brooke trying to take what I have? And, you know, that was the least of Brooke's worries.
Yeah. Yeah, Brooke is not a nice person. I hope she gets what she deserves. All right. So let's talk about a couple other points of the novel here, because I feel like we've jumped all around and just went right to the end because so much to talk about. So they all attend Astor Park Prep, which is filled with heinous rich people. There's maybe one nice rich person in the whole lot of them. The rest of them I could do without. They're like the epitome of what mean girls are, but wealthy mean girls. Does that make sense? Like, that's kind of what I felt. It was mean girl, but on a level of extreme wealth, essentially. So, and the boys rule the roost there. So no one is outright horrible to Ella because Reed hasn't told them to be, but they're also not nice to Ella. And if Reed had said, you need to be nice, they would have been nice. So that's kind of how it all starts off for Ella. She's kind of stuck in this school where no one really likes her. No one's really nice to her. And she's stuck with the boys who don't want anything to do with her. So it's a pretty awesome start to her schooling there. She does meet a girl, Val, at a party. Val is kind of a distant cousin to one of the very wealthy Carrington heiresses. So there's that. And so her and Val kind of become fast friends. And her cousin is Jordan. And Jordan basically wants Reed like there's no tomorrow. So not once, but twice, Jordan verbally attacks Ella. The first time, Reed is a little bit indifferent to it. He kind of ignores it. The second time is kind of my favorite. It was a ballsy move on Ella's part. Ella was going to be made to try out for the dance squad, in which Jordan is the captain of. So Jordan, being Jordan, left her a stripper outfit to put on and to try out in, and was very nasty because she never had any expectation of Ella trying out. Ella decided to don the stripper gear, walk out into the gym where the football team, which includes most of the Royals, as well as the entire football team, were there. And so her and Jordan had a confrontation, and Ella basically punched Jordan in the face. I think it's something we all would have wanted to do, so props to Ella.
Jordan is Regina George on acid. Like,
yeah, Jordan is way more intense than Regina George, which is that even possible? Yes, it is.
Like, if you need to kind of, yeah, she's Regina George on acid. It's insane. But that scene is so satisfying after all of the crap. Like, Ella just, you know, like, you shouldn't promote violence. But, man, by that point, Ella just needed to, like, let some of it go. And, yeah, I was so excited that she just laid into Jordan. I was like, thank God.
It was pretty impressive. It was a moment that I was like, yes, finally. But I mean, Ella was never just kind of a rollover and play dead kind of girl. She was definitely sassy. She didn't keep feelings or thoughts to herself, and she gave as good as she got most of the time. So that's one thing to say for Ella. She didn't take their crap lying down. She really mouthed off to them as well. And then clearly she punched somebody in the face. Reed was not a happy bunny about that for many, many reasons. So, Karen, what did you think about that scene? Did that make you feel a little bit better for Ella?
Yeah, and, surprisingly throughout this whole book, like, I liked Ella a lot. I felt like we really connected to her story. Obviously, we know a lot of what's happened to her versus what's happened to the Royals. And she was a very proactive part of her own story. So she was a really strong character that you could kind of... Even if you couldn't relate to her, you rooted for her, and I thought that was really important. But, yeah, some of these characters we ended up meeting at the school, you know, I was surprised that by the end I kind of ended up liking some of them. And at least Val from the beginning you really liked, and it was so great that she had somebody that she could actually talk to on the same level who understood that, you know, she was kind of second citizen too, and that they connected because of that was just, Ella really needed another girl in her life.
Yeah, one who wasn't trying to backstab her and be ridiculous, which is what they mostly do in this lovely place. There's no girl law whatsoever. It's all very wild jungle nastiness. So then we get on to kind of a Callum always tells Ella that when she goes at Reed, when she makes smart mouth comments to Reed, that she's poking the tiger. And so one of the interesting scenes was Ella and Val go out dancing, and it's at a club, so there's like a cage, and so they're dancing in the cage, and Ella looks up and realizes that Reed is kind of fixated on watching her, and so Ella plays it up. And then when she gets out of the cage, Reed's not there anymore, so she thinks she's imagined him. Because throughout the whole thing, even though Reed's really awful, there's some level of Ella that's attracted to him. Initially, it's probably just physical attraction, but eventually it kind of turns a corner. So she goes out and she runs into Easton in the club, and they're talking. And so Ella notices this guy, and he's going to come over and see her. And, of course, Easton scares him away, which is kind of funny. And then Easton's like, all right, let's dance. And so Ella dances with him, And as she's dancing with him, she's sort of comforting him because he's having a really hard time. And this is what happens. Like, it's a pattern for Easton. He gets intoxicated and then he gets really sad. We see that multiple times for him throughout the book. And so she's kind of just comforting him initially. And then she sees Reed watching them. And Ella decides she's really going to poke the tiger. And this is after Reed's already caught them kissing once. So Ella says, "Kiss me like you mean it." And Easton's like, "I know you're trying to make Reed jealous, but that's okay. I'm thinking of someone else too." Or, "I know you want to make believe that I'm Reed. It's okay. I'm thinking of someone else too." And he kisses her. And Reed is not happy. So again, I think it's really interesting. There's a lot of game playing that happens in the first three quarters of the book. And once that sort of resolves itself, you can start to like the characters more, I think. It's the game playing that's really so hard to deal with because it's so brutal. And it's, you know, especially for Reed, he's very cutthroat. Like, he goes at her all the time. And he's just mean and nasty about it.
I do have to say, I love that kissing Easton is the thing that, like, nullifies Reed's dictatorial mandates about Ella. Like, the minute everybody sees her making out with Easton, they all know that something has changed. Like, whether or not anything was laid down the law by Reed, that instance, you know, the entire school starts to treat her differently. She's no longer, like, they don't necessarily, like, go out of their way to make her life a living hell. They just basically let her exist like Val does. And it's so ridiculous that something like that can change that much. But apparently, you know, like, that just, it floors me. But it was, you know, it was nice to see that something changed.
Right. So they go, Ella drives Easton back that night. And Easton goes and just, like, collapses in her room. And here's one of the parts that I thought was really odd. When they got home, so she's like, "All right, fine, I'm not going to move him. I'm not going to go sleep in his bed. I'm just going to sleep in the bed," which is fine. Like, that doesn't bother me. But what the weird part for me was in this situation was that she just took off her dress and slept in just her panties. No bra, no t-shirt, no tank top, nothing. And decided that was an okay thing to do. Like, why would you do that? That was one of the things that caught me off guard in the novel. Like, I was like, this is just a weird thing to do. It doesn't make sense. I don't know how you guys felt about it, but
I don't know if I ever really caught that. Like,
yeah, no, I read it. It definitely caught my attention.
No. Oh, I'm sure it happened. I don't know if I ever, like, paid enough attention to find that weird, because I definitely would have found that weird. I think I just assumed that either that's how she always slept and didn't care or what. But, you know, the only justification I can make for that is that she's used to being on stage, she's stripped before, and maybe it just doesn't faze her.
But, like, she maybe was never naked on stage. She always had on clothing on stage.
Right. But I mean, like, maybe she just...
It kind of threw me when I read it. I was like, this is weird.
Yeah.
I ran back and read it to make sure I was right, because the next morning she wakes up and Easton is gone, but Reed, the rage monster, is in her room. And she has to be really careful not to move the sheets because she's naked underneath. And so Reed just assumes that she slept with Easton. And he is not happy. Again, shockingly. Which leads us to the boat scene. So, Karen, you go ahead and you tell us how you felt about the boat scene. Because I have a feeling this is one of your sticking points.
Are you sure you want me to?
Oh, absolutely.
Aww.
I hated it a lot. Again, made me feel really uncomfortable. And the line where Reed says, "Oh, you know, I'll have sex with you," is, you know, "I'll do that for you so that you won't have sex with Easton or my father. Like, I'll take one for the team." Really? You're not fooling anyone.
Yeah, anyone could have seen right through that.
It was not great. And, yeah, this is also one of the times that, like, it felt like he was manhandling her, and it made me really uncomfortable, and I wasn't sure how far he was going to take it. And I don't, like, I trust him now, but, and I guess I trusted him because I trusted that they weren't going to have him do something completely unforgivable. But he was towing that line, the same as Easton had earlier, and it just, it does not endear them to me when that happens.
Yeah, so essentially, they all go yachting. Callum decides it's a great idea. Mind you, Callum goes up and is basically doing Brooke in front of everyone on the boat on the top level, which is so disturbing on so many levels.
Man, it's
really bad. And so Reed decides he needs to have a talk with Ella about this whole situation and he can't handle it anymore. And so he takes Ella down to one of the rooms underneath, tells Easton to go upstairs and keep Dad and the twins away from everybody. And basically propositions her. He's like, I get it. You had a different lifestyle. You have needs. But here's the deal. I'll be the person that meets your needs, all of them, whatever you want. He's like, I'll be that guy. But you have to stay away from Easton and my dad. Which is hysterical on lots of levels. Because A, Ella is a virgin. She may have been a stripper, but it doesn't mean she had a whole lot of time to do anything else. And she's just kind of like, what? Like, for real? And he takes himself so seriously in that moment. You're like, dude, like, you get that this is really about you, right? Because anybody else can see right through that gig. Like, you've got to be kidding me. And he also tries to make it like, well, we don't want you to ruin the royal name because you live with us. You're a royal now. Like, if you go out and do this with a bunch of other guys at school, it's going to be bad. So I'll take the heat. I'll take one for the team on this one, which is so ridiculous and stupid because by now you can definitely see through him. And so Ella decides, well, if he wants to treat me this way, I'm going to treat him this way. And he's practically naked. And she basically ties him up and leaves him there, which I thought was a bit priceless, not gonna lie. So yeah, there was that. So I figured that would be one of the scenes that you did not like, Karen. I wasn't in love with it, but I like the fact that Ella kind of got her revenge a little bit on him because I think he deserved it in a big way. Mm-hmm. And so
yeah, like,
as a constant,
she's...
go ahead, sorry.
She's not the kind of girl to take something like that sitting down. Like, people don't tell her what she's going to do. So it was really, really lovely to see her be like, well, screw you. I'll, you know, like, I'm going to take your offer, quote unquote, and, you know, shove it. Because at this point, I hate all of you and you all suck. So, like, just her manipulations of Reed in that scene and just after that scene, it makes everything worse for her because he thinks he knows what happens and all of that.
Right.
But ultimately, like, it proves that she can play on his level. Like, she is just as good at these stupid games that he's playing as he is. And I think that's why later on they seem to be able to find a truce, is because he knows that she's not just going to lay down and do whatever Reed tells her to do.
Yeah, she's not one of the meek. So, and so basically, Ella, after she's tied him up, basically says, no, I don't think I'm going to play with you. I'm going to go play with your dad. And so she goes up and pulls Callum aside, and then they go into his stateroom. And essentially, they talk about her dad and his wife, Maria. And that's the conversation they have. There's nothing sexual about it, nothing. But Reed doesn't know any better, and he just assumes the worst of people. And so he assumes that Ella's doing something awful, and she's not. She's just playing him for every bit that he's worth because he's so ridiculous. And so when they get back to the house, a couple of times Ella's woken up in the middle of the night to hear Easton and Reed whispering in the hall, and she knows that Reed's left before in the middle of the night. And so she hears them leaving this time, and she decides she's going to follow them because she's basically all done with this. She needs to know what's going on. So she follows them, and she discovers that basically Reed goes and he fights in a fight club. Like, this is what he does. The poor little rich boy goes to a fight club. And Easton, she's trying to be really sneaky, but Easton discovers her there and, of course, points her out to Reed because that's super helpful. And Easton's kind of like, this is your fault, Ella. This is what happens because you provoke him. And she's like, no, not really. And so Reed is a beast when it comes to fighting. He is a bare knuckle brawler, let me tell you. And so he wins not one, but three fights, and then they leave. And when they get back, Ella decides that she's done. She's not playing this anymore. She's going to go talk to him. And on for her part, she's going to call a truce. So she follows him down to the beach, and they have this conversation. And this is kind of the big turning point for them, where he understands that she's not what he thought she was, and that he has made a grave error in judgment, but he doesn't know how to fix it. And so he backs off, even though he doesn't really agree to it in the moment. He kind of backs off the nastiness, and you can tell because everyone else starts to come around more and more. So I thought that was an interesting moment for them to have. And then from there, other boys at school start to ask her out. And then we get to Daniel, the douchebag, because there's really no other name for him. Kristen, why don't you tell us about Daniel? Because I might hurt somebody if I have to speak about him.
Sure. So Daniel, the douchebag, Ella meets him at school. He basically gets Reed's seal of approval. When he finds out that Daniel's been courting Ella, he acts like a total gentleman. And then she gets this random warning from Savannah, the girl that she had originally gotten her tour from and who she basically didn't have a great impression of, but wasn't the worst, you know, person at Astro Prep. She gets this warning to stay away from Daniel. And you don't know whether to take this warning seriously because of who Savannah has been so far, or whether, you know, to take Reed and Easton's, like, approval of this guy. So Ella basically just lets this guy court her for a little while. And then I believe it's after a football game, they end up at a party. And she's basically decided that she's going to give this Daniel guy a try. She's going to date him, and they walk around the party together, and they have a great time, and she's meeting, you know, new people who are really nice to her, and everything just seems to be looking up for Ella. And then they end up in, I believe it's the pool house. It's like basically like a side room. They're separated from the rest of the party. And it's him and one of his other friends and these two townie girls, and they're playing darts, and all of a sudden she feels a prick in her arm, and Daniel basically pretends that he like poked her with a dart and like jokes around about it. But Ella moments later starts to realize that she is, you know, she's disoriented, and the room is kind of spinning, and she doesn't know exactly what happened. She doesn't put the pieces together, but all of a sudden she's desperate to find Reed because A, the drugs are kicking in, and B, something just doesn't feel right to her. So she starts like basically asking for Reed and talking about Reed, and Daniel, you know, is not exactly happy about it. But it's when she starts yelling for Reed that you know, we know what's gone on. You can put the pieces together that Daniel is drugging her and is going to probably rape her. And then the royals enter the equation. And what hits me the most about this scene, and why I actually end up really loving this scene, despite Daniel being a total ass and just hating everything about him, is that Ella thinks that the royals entering the room is like the worst thing that could happen, because they're going to hate her more, and everything's going to get worse because things had just started to get better. And instead, they rescue her and come to her aid, and Reed sweeps her up and gets her out of there. And the rest of them basically, we don't know exactly what happens between the royals and Daniel, but it's not good. And so,
well,
yeah,
we do know Daniel, what happens. Nothing.
Do we?
They don't touch him. He's not been touched. They threaten him quite thoroughly.
Exactly.
I mean, they're not tiny boys, man. But if I were Daniel, I'd be very nervous. And Reed gives him the opportunity. He says, if you tell us the truth, only one of us will punch your face in. He's like, if you don't, all three of us will make you into a science project. Like, or all five of us, rather, will make you into a science project. And the boy still tries to lie. I'm like, dude, you really have no self-preservation skills whatsoever. Anyway, continue.
No, I mean, that's basically Daniel, because after that, I don't know if someone else wants to take the revenge, but they concoct a plan, and then Ella concocts a better one.
Right, well, you skip the Reed volunteering part. Ella is basically rolling on Molly, which is not a good thing for her, and possibly some other things. And she's incredibly horny the whole time. So essentially, someone needs to stay with her and make sure she's okay, and may have to help her out, as the boys put it. As Gideon, the oldest child, decides that someone should be with her and help her, in quotation marks, if you will. And so Easton's like, well, you know, if I can do it. Like, Easton volunteers, but not... The thing with Easton throughout this whole thing is that I don't feel like it's in a creepy way. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of... Like, I don't know. There's something different about him that doesn't feel predatory or creepy in any way.
Like, it's he's kind of befriended her. So rather than being the guy who's trying to get into her pants, now he's her actual friend who's saying, if this has to happen and no one wants to do this, I will do it she's my friend. Yeah.
No, here's the only thing with this one whole scene right here, the only thing is no one ever heard of a hospital. I'm just throwing it out there. No one? No?
I know.
Just checking.
I know.
But in the process of Easton being like, you know, I'll be with her, Reed, being Reed, is like, no. No one but me. Again, Reed, let's put all your cards on the table, big guy. It's a little obvious, my friend, to everybody. So Reed takes her to her room, and he's actually, to a little bit to his credit, he's trying to keep her, like, calm and not have her freak out. And he's, like, got a washcloth that's trying to cool her down. And she's basically throwing herself at him, partially due to the drugs, partially due to the fact that all inhibitions and filters of wanting him have kind of gone by the wayside. So all that she knows is that she wants him. There's no, you know, the drugs kind of took care of all the other things that were related to that. And so, they end up making out and, you know, stuff like that. And so he says, it's only for tonight. It's only for this. This can't happen again. And she's like, you know, all right, whatever. And then so the next day he comes to her by the pool and he says, you know, do you feel like I took advantage of you? Like, he's very concerned that she's going to feel like he took advantage. And so they have a conversation about it. And then not only is he out there to warn her that she's not to go to the Worthington party, but Gideon and Easton have all tell her, don't go to this party tonight. And Ella's like, oh, but I'm going to the party tonight, boys. And so from there, she and Val, along with Savannah, who is very helpful in this situation, because come to find out, Daniel, the not nice boy, did this to Savannah's cousin. So Savannah is a little bit angry. And so they all decide, they come up with a revenge plan that is much better than the boys, let's just beat them into oblivion, which they were more than happy to do, mind you. Instead, the girls get their own sort of revenge on Daniel, where she kind of pulls another Reed where she ties him up and leaves him naked for the world to see. And he eventually gets loose while he's naked and runs after Ella to kind of call her a name. And the deal for Reed is that Reed is not allowed to get into a fight unless someone threatens himself, his family, or throws the first punt. And it was clearly decided before they even went to the party that Reed was going to be the one that got to beat up Daniel, obviously. So as Daniel's running at them naked down, or he put on his boxers, I guess, running at them down the beach, he basically verbally threatens Ella. And Reed is like, oh, that sounded like a threat. So by the time Daniel gets in front of them, Reed basically throws one punch and that's the end of him. Like, Daniel is done. So it was pretty impressive revenge on Ella's part. Way better than what the Royals were planning, because boys are boys. Sometimes revenge is just a bunch of fists being thrown and it's not nearly as entertaining as, you know, taking lots of naked pictures of the jerk who tried to be a scumbag and then putting them all over the internet. Just saying. What did you guys think about the revenge plot? Did it work for you? Was it good?
I mean, for me, I thought it was really wonderful that Savannah kind of got to be involved and that ended up being a bonding moment for Val and Savannah and Ella. Like, she realizes that, you know, maybe Ella's not so bad, and, you know, Ella may have just won herself over another friend. And yeah, Daniel deserved everything that came at him, and Ella's way more creative and a way better revenge monger than the rest of them. So I was really, really, like, proud of Ella for saying, like, no, I'm not just gonna do what Reed says. I've already showed you that I'm not just gonna do what Reed says, and here I am, and I'm way better at this than you guys.
Savannah was my favorite part of that too. I'm just glad that we can see different sides to the supposed mean girls. I mean, some of them don't change, but
right.
Some of them do. And
I think Savannah was the least mean of the mean girls. And Savannah's got her own thing with the royals because, again, that's where Gideon comes into play. Something happened. Savannah and Gideon were together, and it was fantastic, and then it just wasn't. And it's not really clear why. And so Savannah's still kind of struggling with that. And, again, I think it has something to do with Brooke. Like, I would not be surprised. So, I don't know. So, yeah. I like the fact that she, like, bashed him over the head not once but twice. Savannah was a little violent. I was a little concerned for Daniel's life. But, like, only because I didn't want the girls to be charged with murder, not because he deserved to live or anything. What can I say? I'm mean. And so then, you know, we kind of already discussed the ending. From there, basically, Ella gets Reed to, like, admit that he feels for her. And even though he's consistently trying to say that he can't offer her anything, that he has nothing to offer, he slowly comes around to the fact that he wants to be with her. And previous to all of this, really, there was only one girl that Reed had really been connected to throughout the whole story. Even though, like, Easton and the twins are kind of like little man whores, it's not the same for Reed, which you would think would be the opposite, but not the case. So we kind of just have Reed, who's complicated and who admits these feelings, and he doesn't really know what to do because he knows that he's going to leave and he's never coming back, and he doesn't want to kind of set them both up for that situation. And yet he does, and a situation actually that's significantly worse is what he sets them up for. So I don't know. That's kind of where we're left once we get the big Brooke dirty girl reveal at the end. We're kind of just left with Ella feeling broken and leaving the royals behind her.
I did want to share a few, just one little, like, random. I got a chance to ask Ella, or Elle and Jen, it's going to kill me. I got a chance to ask Elle and Jen a few questions and did, like, an interview, which you can find on Hypeable, already posted. But in the interview, I had some questions clearly about Reed and about the ending and about Brooke's role in later books and about where Ella's going at the end of the book. And let's just say that their answers were, we can't answer this, it's too spoilery. All of these questions will be answered in book two. You'll have to wait and see. And we're not trying to be jerks here, but we don't want to give anything away. And I took all of those out of the interview because it was just too funny. Like, a lot of times when you ask an author about a character like Reed, who's clearly, you know, all kinds of messed up, when you ask him questions like, you know, what exactly is going on? You know, is he going to redeem himself? They, you know, they want to tell you a little bit about him without giving anything away. They would not give me anything. So it makes me believe that Broken Prince, which is supposed to come out in July, will hopefully give us a lot more answers than Paper Princess did. Like, I think this book was meant to stir everything up, and that book two will start to answer some of the many, many questions that we all have.
I also wonder, because it's called Broken Prince, if it's told from his point of view. Do we know that?
I don't. They haven't really said much about Broken Prince yet. I'm curious. They've said throughout all of this that this is Ella's story. So it makes me think that it would be from Ella's point of view. But with the title Broken Prince, I'm kind of wondering if this book won't be from Reed's POV.
I would hope so, because this is going to sound so disturbing and wrong, but I would love to be inside Reed's head. Because
yeah,
there's so much that goes on behind, you know, his mask, that you get nothing because it's Ella's point of view. So being inside Reed's head might make me feel a little better. Like, any kind of insight into the craziness that is his life would be helpful.
Definitely. The only other thing I asked about was Easton, because you know, you do, if there's one person besides Ella that you really do cling to in this book, it's Easton. He kind of sets himself apart, and they wouldn't say whether or not, you know, like what lies in store for Easton either, just that they both really, really love his character. And so knowing that they have both grown as attached to Easton as a lot of the readers have, I think things bode well for him, hopefully, cross our fingers. But yeah, so they're keeping very tight-lipped about what happens next and anything having to do with those final moments. So we'll just have to
gonna kill me until wait for July.
I know.
Yeah. So the one thing I do have is in the back of the novel, like when you read through to the end, there's a quote from Paper Prince, and it doesn't tell you who says it. So I'll read you guys the quote and you can tell me who you think says it. "You look gorgeous and hot, and if I stay in here any longer, your virginity will be on the floor somewhere next to yesterday's panties." Classy as always. But who do you guys think said it? I have my thoughts because of the tone of it.
It's got to... He's not wordy, but it's got to be Reed.
I think it's Easton. Because if any royal is going to go out and find Ella, it's not going to be Reed.
True.
He doesn't want her back in that mess. It's going to be Easton, because Easton sees her as a friend. And there's a scene with her and Easton where he basically says, "Please don't ever leave. Please don't leave. We need you. It's better with you here." So the one, yes, Reed will be affected, but Reed got himself into this mess. You know what I mean? He always knew that this was going to be a huge mess. Easton doesn't have the same insight about Brooke that Gideon and Reed do. He knows that they're all bad for girls and that, you know, their destruction. But I don't think he knows everything that's going on. And so for Easton, his saving aspect of all of this was Ella. So if anyone's going to go find Ella, I think it would be Easton. And the only person that Ella might even speak to in the royal family would be Easton.
I do agree with you that he will be the one to go find her. I am totally in agreement with you on that. I'm just wondering if this is from that or if this is from later in the book. Like, we don't know where this quote belongs. And if it's
don't.
What?
Oh, I said no. We absolutely don't know where it's
from. So I'm wondering if this might come after Easton goes and gets her or somehow Reed and her end up in the same room. That's the only reason, it could be either of them, let's face it. I mean, Reed is not as wordy as Easton, so I can see this being Easton in, you know, like, there's no stretch of the imagination that it could be him.
I think it's the joking tone that I read it, like, when I read it in my head, like, there's a joking tone to it. It's not meant to be, like, this very serious quote. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Oh, yeah. No, I get it.
So that's why it leads me to believe that it's Easton. Karen, do you have an opinion either way?
I hope it's Reed, because I don't want Easton to say any of this kind of stuff to her anymore. I want Easton to just be the platonic best friend, the brother that she never had. And maybe it is a joking tone, and I guess if it ends up being that way in context, that's fine. But if it's more serious, like if whoever is saying this is honestly trying not to, like, you know, have sex with her or whatever.
The only reason I say that it's Reed is, like, he's trying really hard. Like, the situation he's in, we already know that something's totally wrong with him and Brooke. And so maybe he's trying to be the better guy. And so, you know, after Easton brings her back, he gets in a room with her and they're talking it out and he says, okay, you look gorgeous and hot, and if I stay in here any longer, your virginity will be on the floor somewhere next to yesterday's panties. Like, I can see it being his exit. Like, I have to go now. So who knows? We'll see. But
yeah, we'll see. See, my only problem with that is I'm kind of like, will she even let him anywhere near her? Like,
true.
If I, like, her react, like, he, no. I can see her throwing things at him. I can see her punching him. I can't see her letting him anywhere near enough to make a comment like that and think that he can get away with it.
Yeah, I guess I just assumed it was from a lot later in the book.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Could just be me. I was just like, oh, it's got to be Easton.
Watch where
maybe
both
because
wrong.
It's just wish fulfillment. I know, it could be anybody. It could be Gideon. Who knows? Yeah. I don't know. So, all right. So, do you guys have any other thoughts or comments about Paper Princess? No? All right, then. No?
Yeah, no, I don't
Kristen,
think so.
Anything? I know, we said a lot, you guys. We had a lot to say about this book. A lot. All right, we will be picking out a book for May shortly, and of course, your suggestions are always welcome. And then next week, we have a special guest that's going to be on, so stay tuned for that episode. Brush up on your Sherlock knowledge, because it's going to be all about Sherlock Holmes. So until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Goodbye, guys.